Welcome to French Renault Diaries Uncensored, Bants and Rants. The shorter episodes, in between the chunkier ones we've actually put some thought into, where we get everything off our chests. Will you learn anything?
Probably.
Yes.
Will you laugh?
Possibly.
Will we?
Without a doubt. And it did actually show that on the programme that they make kind of military figures, don't they? So their competence isn't in the building trade. And I was just like, that's got guts. That's got guts to buy that and think you're going to renovate it all in the next 50 years.
You need £2 million. I'm Sue.
I'm Rosie.
I'm Michaela.
Let's get to it. Morning, ladies.
Morning.
Have you had a good week?
Hello.
How's your week been?
Yeah, not bad. How about you?
Not too bad. I was just telling Michaela before this that we've just done a quote for some shutters and...
Oh, yeah.
it's quite a funny one, and they've not been here long, so obviously don't know the kind of costs and things for things in France, and they put at the bottom of it, oh, it's a little bit higher than we thought, so we'll have a think about it, but I suppose we all need to get something out of it.
What?
As in, like...
What?
You know what I mean?
We've got like give it us cheaper kind of thing.
Oh yeah, obviously we've got
like it's an exchange
profit out of it. Well, yeah, of course we have.
Are they mad? Well, are these people like crazy?
Yeah, we've been getting it quite a bit actually. I mean, obviously when we first came here, it was we were a bit shocked to be fair, prices of things, but yeah, we've been getting it quite a bit lately.
The prices are a lot different. But, you know, there's a bit of a kind of like trade-off though, isn't there? Because houses and property are cheaper.
Yeah.
Doing
them up is expensive. And that's just because of like wages and cotisations that we have to pay, social charges and, you know, it's all kind
and,
of,
and making
I want to
a
say,
bit
double.
Of you're
not,
you're
in well,
a, you're a business.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah. When you think that you've got cotisations, you know, our range and level of businesses, that's not cheap. You're looking at 40% plus. You know, our tax, the cost of running a business, an accountant's not cheap. So, you know, there's lots of hidden overheads that a client or a homeowner just doesn't understand or perhaps not appreciate.
Yeah.
But I guess that's how we educate our customers. I mean, we often get refusal on quotes. It's like, ooh, out of budget. And we go, we appreciate that we're not the cheapest, but we're the best. But feel free to go and get other quotes. But this is what you get within our quote. And we're not going to always, you know, be in that person's budget or price range. So, yeah, invariably they come back because they've done a circuit, realise that, yeah, what you're getting for your money is value.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Value, peace of mind and insurance.
Yeah. I mean, we've had a client recently who's a bit like that. We've done quite a big job for them, and we've renovated most of his ground floor. So opened out the kitchen, renovated the bathroom, done a brand new bathroom, turned a garage into a bedroom on the ground floor. And then it came to the tiling, and we did a divi for the tiling, which was a separate entity at that time. He looked at the divi and he went, oh no, I'll do it myself. I can do that in 2 days myself. That's too expensive. And I was like, okay, if you can do that in 2 days, then you tell me when you're going to do it and we'll fit that in, because the plumber needs to come in after you and then put all the bathroom equipment in after the tiling. Anyway, I want to say 3 or 4 months down the line, he's still not finished the tiling. So,
yeah.
And we've had, you know, comments like, I don't know why this job's taking so long. Sometimes you feel like banging your head against a wall.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, we're doing some work on our own house, actually. And Scott's been, we're having a concrete staircase put in, he's building out a block, but like in the UK, be able to buy the slabs for the corner bit big enough and cut them down. But obviously it's France, so nowhere locally stores or stocks big enough concrete slabs that he can cut down. So he's had to cast his own and all that kind of thing.
God.
So things just take a bit longer, don't they?
So have you ladies been goggleboxing this week? I've been doing a little bit.
Yeah, I've been watching some more of Help I Bought a Village, which is
I watched a bit of that. I watched a bit of that because of the people that you went to see and you did a quote for.
I did actually pull them up on it on YouTube comments. It was making out that we'd given this most ridiculous quote just for the roof, and it was so false. It really, and it was on national TV. I know they didn't name us or anything like that, but
You know it's you.
It's really bad.
That tower would have been completely. That was for pretty much a full restoration of that, of the whole thing, including the flooring and all that kind of thing. I mean, this guy reckons he's going to do the flooring himself. That's what he put on the comment. Oh, I'll do the flooring myself, so I don't need. I didn't need a quote for that. I thought, but you had it. You didn't say that in the beginning. You've since think that you can do that floor yourself.
The first thing that struck me about it was the size of what they've bought and like the state of it. I mean, they make, I think you mentioned at some point that they make tiny little soul, and it did actually show that on the programme that they make kind of military figures, don't they? So their competence isn't in the building trade. And I was just like, that's got guts to buy that and think you're going to renovate it all in the next 50 years.
You need £2 million. To get that to what they envision with the sheets and this and that, you need a couple of million to get that finished.
Absolutely. You need really deep pockets.
Yeah.
And I assume that's why they've signed up to be on a TV programme and then generate income through that and then YouTube.
Yeah.
But you're not gonna sell a lot of military figures to make the money to get that renovation done.
I don't know.
The enthusiasm's there.
That brings in. It's quite an interesting, I have to say, that was the most interesting aspect of watching them. When they actually, they found out how much they had to spend and then they were like, well, we're going to do a tea room, I think they said. And then that kind of fell through because they realised they had to do planning and ERP and stuff. Yeah. So they couldn't do that and it was going to cost too much or too complicated. And then they went, so we've decided to go back to our original career of making small figures. And then they got out of the oven or whatever it is and then started making them again to generate some cash to actually do the renovation works.
But to be fair to them, with the history of that place and what he does for a living, it kind of goes hand in hand. And if it was I would be pushing to those things together, as in a bit like, I suppose, a stately home in the UK where you would have a gift shop that then you sell things that are related to that. Because it's got a military history, then just really, really emphasise on that. Just go in that direction.
I think so.
Stop doing tea rooms because it's just not going to bring the income in.
You know, some people do it and do it well, but it's not an easy... you're in hospitality as well, aren't you? So it's not an easy industry.
Fair.
And if you just land in here with none of the language as well, it's difficult.
And if you've not done hospitality before, it's not a case of just making a cup of coffee for people.
No.
It's linking hard work. It's hard work.
It's hard work, but I think some of the aspect that's lost sometimes is the fact that you need almost like a really good eye to do hospitality. Also, it's not about making, like you say, a good cup of tea, coffee, or making a good cake. You need to present things in a certain way that people want to come and like buy into it, and it looks nice and it creates like this lifestyle that they're like, oh, we love going there.
And not only that, but you have to live and breathe that aspect yourself. We've got a restaurant near us, Indian, lovely, very recent, but the front of house, you kind of look at him and kind of go, you've not learned any people skills. It's just like name, sit down. And it leaves you thinking, well, I really don't want to come back because there's no joie de vie, there's no ambiance, there's no human face-to-face connection made between me as a customer and somebody that's going to be passing over some money at the end of my experience to somebody that's like going to go, oh, thanks.
Is that a Brit who's done that, or is that
no? It's non-British.
Oh, right. Okay.
You know, the chap is French, but has no customer service skills whatsoever, which is indicative of what we experience throughout France a great deal anyway. But yeah.
Well, customer isn't king here. That's for sure.
You learn that pretty quickly, don't you?
Yes.
You have to earn your right.
It isn't right. Never. Yeah. Never right. I mean, do you know what I have been finding? And this is not necessarily renovating, but it is. Obviously, people want to come to France and renovate. And there's a lot on all the expat groups going, I'm moving to France, I'm doing this, I want to move to France, I want to move to France. And what I'm finding, and we're probably all guilty of it, is that somebody said they want to get away from the rat race in the UK. They've got kids, they want to do this, they want to do that. Brilliant. That's probably one of the reasons we're all here. However, they also seem to think that France is this kind of country that's this magical land that everything's going to be fabulous and everything's going to be, and it is. We've got no intention of moving from France. However,
that's like the funniest joke I've ever heard.
Take all those things that annoy you about the UK, apart from like the busyness, depending on where you're going to go, bring them to France because they still happen, but do it in a foreign language. So kind of think about how that's going to be, dealing with all of the stuff, the cost of living crisis, because it's not, France isn't oblivious to that. They're in a real mess.
No.
And it's only going to get harder and harder and more expensive and more expensive.
It is. And I think it's quite unforgiving as well, France. The bureaucracy is unforgiving.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. French people are lovely and friendly, but they're quite unforgiving in some aspects of it. If you don't know, if you don't know what you don't know, they're not kind of like coming forward to say, oh, I'll help you. I'll help you understand how it happens. I mean, go to the prefecture, go to get your titre de séjour, or go to, you know, the local mairie and ask a question, or go to, you know, invariably you'll get a blank face and someone saying, huh? Wait, yeah. What, you don't know that?
Yeah.
Or, I can't help you. That's not my job.
Yeah, there's an emphasis on that. In the UK, everything is spoon-fed to you. So any information, you're told it from a very early age. In France, it's not like that. You have to find that information out.
Self-sufficiency, isn't it?
I don't know if I agree with spoon-fed. I just think it's easier to understand it. You can quite easily get to the crux of a problem and understand the fastest route to it easily because you speak the language and you understand all the nuances of the laws and because you've grown up with it. And it's the same for the French. They've grown up with it, so they understand it completely. But if you come into this country and you think you're just going to like hit the ground running without the language or really knowing the area that you're going to move to, I mean, we did that. I'm not saying don't do it, but it's quite...
Be aware it's not going to be this magical land that you think it's going to be.
It's not. It can be magical in some ways.
And don't view it through rose-tinted glasses.
No.
Or even bifocals out here.
Yeah. Be prepared to use your tenacity to the max. Yeah. I think it's like 80% tenacity.
Yeah.
And the rest is just luck.
We'll leave that for somebody else to go into.
The
schools in France. But anyway.
So did we touch upon the Dick and Angel making their comeback?
I'm excited. I'm gonna watch it. I think their kids they're just so adorable, and I want to see what they've been up to, because they weren't gonna come back, were they? They kind of finished it, didn't they? And now they've come back. So, and I know they've been off and been doing world tours
and
all that kind of thing, but do you know what? I'm interested. I'll watch it. Yeah.
Given that they were, you know, they were the couple that kick-started a lot of these TV reality shows off, you know, they kind of led the way for others to follow. It would be nice to, I mean, because it's their 10th season. So, it would be nice to see what they've been up to and to kind of revisit the chateau as well and see what's been happening in their absence, because obviously things have been done.
Yeah. But by who?
Exactly. Is it Builder Mate Steve?
Do you know what? One thing I said last night, we were watching Help I Bought a Village, and a woman had bought a place. Oh, gosh, I can't remember. Might have been France, it could have been somewhere else. And obviously they're all renovating, so they're all buying these villages and renovating them. And they'll tell you how much they bought it for, but they don't tell you the budget to renovate. One person actually said that at the end of theirs, they bought it for 140,000 and they think they'll have spent, with the cost of buying it, $500,000 by the time they're finished. So that's the only one that they've touched on.
And what did they buy? What kind of property did they buy?
They bought, they're kind of not far from Limoges, actually. Not far from you, I don't think, Michaela. They're kind of north Limoges. So they bought, it's not a village, it's on help, I bought a village. It's basically a manor house with a farm on it. And it's got a lot of outbuildings. It's in kind of like a courtyard in the middle of a load of farm. I wouldn't call it a village, but it's...
Okay, it's got outbuildings, basically.
Yeah, it's got outbuildings.
A little hamlet.
They're actually really nice to watch. I really like them. And she's got a really nice eye for stuff as well. Some of the builders, they're not professionals. And Scott was wincing a little bit last night at some of the things that they were doing on their own. And then they'd got this master joiner in to do some joinery work. And let's just say,
Master was pushing it a bit.
He's obviously a retired joiner.
Misuse of the word.
Yeah, but I mean, they put some spindles in on the top of the staircase and all that kind of thing. But I mean, they're a lovely couple, but they're the only ones that have really touched on how much they've got. There was a woman somewhere else and she'd bought this property and it was a wreck, a complete wreck. And I thought, how much have you got? You know what I mean? Let us know. I want to know how much you've got to renovate this place. I want to know if it's... Because I think people watching want to know if it's within their reach as well.
Mm. But I don't think it... I think it will always be out of people's reach in that respect. Because they come with maybe a kind of budget in mind and it's just not realistic as soon as they hit the ground. That sounds like she's bought a property for 140 grand, which is a manoir without buildings. I mean, that sounds amazing. 140 grand.
Yeah.
And you just get sucked into that. And then the budget might have been like 150, 200 grand to do it. And she's already on $500,000 or whatever. Or now it seems like she's got... where's she going to get that money from?
I mean,
I don't think people want to like share that. It's like almost like, look at me, I was a bit stupid. So
yeah, how dare you ask? Yeah,
yeah. And it's doing jeets, doing retreats, and I'm thinking,
yeah.
I mean, I just jeets. You're not gonna get your money back. I'm sorry, but unless you've got a complex that's already well established,
absolutely. In a place that generates income, like in a place that's a good holiday area. I mean, what happened to location, location, location that we all watched in like the noughties or whatever, where that was like the main thing? And it still kind of is. And like people are buying these properties like in remote areas and then thinking everyone's going to come to them. I don't get that. I mean, the amount of marketing they're going to have to do to actually generate the drive of people to them, unless they've got like masses of friends and family who can like sustain like give them an income and live in. I don't know how that's going to be possible. They kind of forget that because of the, again, going back to the dream and fantasy of, wow, it's a manoir, 140 grand outbuildings of what it could be, and forgetting the important case of location, it seems.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, where I am, I mean, you know, I'm in the wedding business, and the amount of wedding venues that are up for sale that we've worked at, it's quite staggering.
Really?
And they're well-established businesses. I mean, for various reasons, I imagine that they're up for sale. Some, I think one of them is because of a marriage breakdown, which is fair enough. Beautiful place. Another one is, I don't think it's generating enough income for the amount that they've invested into it, and they don't use it particularly because it was their second home. So it's not generating enough kind of wedding business, I don't think. Beautiful, beautiful place. And then one up from us, which is, I mean, they've probably had it 5 years. Really quite well established in event space, beautiful place, but that's up for sale as well.
Right.
So whether they're not generating enough to kind of claw back, the only way to claw back their investment is to sell.
It's to sell, yeah.
Or start a YouTube channel.
Yeah.
That seems like the trend, yeah. That generates income. Obviously, that's why a lot of people are doing it.
But it's just going to get saturated again, isn't it?
Yes.
It's going to become like the Jeep market.
Yep.
Where everybody's vying for the same people's attention.
I think so. That's why, I mean, going back to the Dick and Angel thing, yes, I agree. It'll be good watching and I will watch it. Mm. But I'm almost like, oh, not again, really.
You're over it.
You know, a little bit, yeah. I am. I tend to like skip a lot of it now. Like just fast forward it. And I don't know if that's because we're in the trade and like half of it is just like watching someone that, you know, watching us at work. Like, yeah, okay, yeah. You're putting a slate on a room.
And not only
yeah,
that,
I've seen that this week.
But we know factually what goes on behind the scenes. And from our own kind of brain power point of view, it's not real. It's not truthful. It's inauthentic and doesn't sit well with us. So I'd be the same as you, Rosie. I'd be fast forwarding. Yeah.
It just still astounds me that there are people watching these things. 24,000 people have viewed this one video of a guy on his roof or building a wall. And I constantly go back to the fact, like, we do that all the time. Would people really want to see that? Like,
yeah.
I think it's more the fascination that it's a French chateau or a French property, particularly with Americans.
Mm, yeah, that just seemed to be the trend
by
in the market.
Culture, by the architecture. So they will, to be able to get a bit of that escapism, I suppose, they will watch somebody mundanely build a wall.
Well, yeah, and I think they are, pre-Brexit, it was the Brits coming over here, but I think it seems to be more American and Canadian. So
yeah, we've seen a lot of that as well, yeah.
Yeah, reasons, I suppose.
You know, and social and political and economic reasons that take place around the world will always drive a migratory pattern wherever, you know, for people around the world. I mean, we see a lot of Australians, New Zealands, a lot of, you know, as you just mentioned, Americans moving in at the moment. Yeah.
Yeah, but I do fear a little bit for them because they're getting all the same fodder that we were getting throughout the years where it's like, it's not really like that.
Yeah.
So it's like a new generation of expats from a different part of the world having to like learn these things. Yeah.
And also, I guess as well, it's how does the dollar sit with the euro? I mean, I wouldn't know how many dollars you'd get to a euro. But let's say, for instance, it was €1 and you got $1 and you got €2. You know, it's a lot of money to be thinking that you're playing around with. I mean, same as we Brits back in the day, you know, when the dollar versus the pound was pretty strong. You know, you kind of came over here wedged up to the hilt thinking I can buy this, I can buy that. But is that certainly not for Brits, but for the US it might be something that kind of makes their eyes open a bit wider, that
that's the difference wealth in the US and how it's created and wealth in Europe and how it's created. It's not the same
and how it can just
playing
be
field
up.
Is it
yeah
and definitely not in France because there are a lot of regulations and laws that we have here, particularly about workers and how they should get paid and treated properly. That anyway, that's a different subject.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's much harder here to do the same things.
Mm.
So do you think we've got everything off our chests for this week? Anything else that we want to bring to the table in our rants and bants?
We'll save it for next time.
Save it for next time.
Right, okay. I'm sure we'll have like so much more again. So, okay. All right.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget to subscribe to the show to be sure you don't miss anything. Your hosts have been
Rosie Ellis,
Michaela Wilkins,
and Sue Peake-Russell. French Renault Diaries Uncensored was produced and mixed by Katie Wright. And the music is by Grand Project.